1994, this is George Ann Cisco, and I'm interviewing Ladd Davies. I'd like you to tell me a little about your background, please, and how you got to Arkansas.
Well, my father moved here as a resident engineer for the construction of a bridge across the Arkansas River at Marlton when I was 3 years old. And while here, he developed an engineering business of his own and stayed here. So I grew up in Marlton. I went to university at the high school and stayed 2 years, from 31 to 33. And at that time, the CCC program was starting, and then was developing in Arkansas. Mm-hmm. My father was asked to get an organization together to work these people. And we had here, as differentiated from the other CCCs, we had World War I veterans. I was one of, I think my title was Landscape Four. I had had 2 years of engineering study, and of course I had helped my father. So I became, I guess you'd call it the instrument man.
Okay.
In the program, since my father was really the chief engineer as well as superintendent.
Now don't get into what you did, go on and give it the rest of your background.
I stayed 2 years during the first development of the park.
That would have been about
33 to 35.
Okay.
And then I went back to school. After I graduated from the University of Arkansas with a degree in civil engineering, I went to work for the state health department. And I worked for them until World War II came along.
43? Yeah,
43.
When did you go in? 41 or 43?
I don't remember.
I think it was 43.
All right. Until I went in the Army in 43 with a rank of first lieutenant. And I was assigned to the sanitary corps, which was a part of the medical branch of the Army.
Now, would you let me interrupt him?
Sure, go ahead.
Before he got to World War I, he had been given a grant to study private, and he got his master's degree in civil engineering at Harvard. And did that in graduated from Harvard. Even before that, though, he had had special training with the Rockefeller Foundation in malaria control. Now, all this ties up with what happened to him in World War II, because the man under whom was head of the department under whom he studied at Harvard was a consultant for the Institute of Inter-American Affairs, which was more or less a good neighbor policy with Latin America. And when he heard that Ladd was going into the Army, he contacted him and said, "We would like to have you. Just let me know when you get in, and I'll take it from there." So now, this all ties in together with what eventually, you know, so we'll pick it up there.
So I was assigned to the country of Panama.
Mm-hmm.
We had a field party there, so called.
Where we did malaria control.
Malaria control drainage.
Okay.
Outside of the canal zones. But that malaria control was taken care of by the canal zone operations that had been there. But I was working with the people of the rest of the country in their little towns, doing malaria control, directing the
program. Because they had to get the weather. Mm-hmm. Okay, excuse me.
This was considered important because the canal zone did use labor from outside the zone to work through the neighborhood. And they were interested in keeping them up. So I was there 2 years. We were under general contract with the country, and ours was terminating right at the end of the World War II, and so I went back, and
pick it up there.
I went back to Washington, the main office. I said, "Well, you,
you don't need to address to that. Just the fact that they asked you to go with them to Peru, and I could. We have a son, and he could take us with you to Peru. So in 45, I guess it was. We were stationed at Lima, Peru." Where the institute there was helping the country of Peru set up a public health system.
Oh, okay.
And he was an engineer.
In a particular part of it, he was assigned to the jungle part of Peru, the eastern side, the Amazon Valley part. And, so we worked with them on their public health program. And stayed there.
2 years. Decided we wanted to come back home because he and his daddy wanted to come and visit. In contracting business. Municipal contractors, which they did
15 years.
16 years.
15.
And when his father wanted to retire, they decided to close out the business. Went with the Department of Pollution Control and Ecology, became director and stayed as director there in the state of Arkansas until he retired in what? 75, I think.
Okay.
So that's basically.
Okay, that's great.
That's his book.
All right. Now, can we go back to the time at Petagene, and could you talk a little about being the landscape foreman? Is that, I believe that's what you said you were.
Yeah, well, I had some interesting duties. For example, I surveyed the boundaries of the then boundaries
of the park.
Completely, all the way around. Got that done. And I, of course, laid out the roads after being, after I'm being generally located under the direction of Father, and we did what they call staking them out for the men to work to. And water and sewer lines for the cottages and the logs, all those kind of things that the engineering field And I was, well, we located the dam, and designed a stone bridge.
Mm-hmm. The big stone arch?
Yeah.
That's on the National Bridge.
That bridge doesn't have a piece of steel in it. It's completely a stone arch supported structure. And they were building the dam, which actually abuts on one end of the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And clearing for the lake and so forth when I left to go back to school.
Mm-hmm.
It was most interesting work. We accidentally ran into illegal bootlegging operation on one occasion. And we were cutting across to meet the truck to pick us up. Well, none of us had been on the road before. It's on the side of the mountain. So we wanted to take a shortcut to get to it. And smack into this steel and just go into operation.
May I ask you something that I wonder if you already know? Do you know the particulars of how the CCC permit got started?
I know the bare facts. I know about Milton Coleman and what he did and how he got started here. If you want to talk a little about that, that would be great.
I just wondered what you had already found out about that, because it's an interesting tale. I don't think she knows all the little...
I probably don't know all the little, the details.
It came about. Why don't you tell that?
Well, are you talking about Judge
about
Guy?
I'm talking about Guy Amsler. I'm talking about the politics of the whole thing at the game.
The state had a park department. Mm-hmm. It was under the Attorney General's office. Also, the Game and Fish Commission, which had a secretary who was Guy Amsler Sr., who was later a Supreme Court judge.
Mm-hmm.
He was a lawyer, and he was the Secretary of the Game and Fish Commission, and had his office in the same set with the Attorney General at that time. The guy heard that they had this program in Texas, so he maneuvered around and started flying north and found out what it was, what we had to do to get it, apply for it. And actually, they had to develop everything from purchasing to payroll. And he asked my father if he'd be interested in being a... They had some land in Pettigene and going back to the state for taxes. And he'd be interested in taking the job as superintendent and developing the farm. And yes, and so the first thing that came through was you've got, was it 12 or 14 positions so far. Anyway, Dad said, well, I can fill them.
Let me stop here, because you must realize this was the depth of the depression. The depth of the depression. And Miss Davies Senior, who had been here already, 8 years, 16 years, something like that. It was the only engineer, actually, in this county or any of the way around, even if you don't, and had a very nice business,
But all of a sudden, everything just dried up. Nobody could do anything. So when Gaius, who was a friend, called and said, would you like to be the chief up at Pettigee? It was just a marvelous opportunity. At the same time, Lad's sister was in the university. So Mr. Davies was very happy to give Lad a job. I think the machinations of this, I think some of the things that they did in getting the equipment to work with is just hilarious. For instance, everything was done with wheelbarrows and
flags.
Well, the bulldozer had not been invented. We were allocated a small track-type tractor. The track-type tractor had been invented. We had a small one of those that we could use for pulling down trees and three trucks, four trucks. I think we had a flatbed truck and three dump trucks and a pickup. Of course, the pickup was assigned to Dad. He took it. That was his supervisor. I don't remember how many crews. Must have had four or more. Who were taken out from the camp. Now the army took over.
Before he goes into that, I think this is important. I think people do not realize how many organizations work together to do this camp. So I can't go ahead.
Well, the army was assigned to furnish housing and food and upkeep, so forth. So we had it involved having an army captain and maybe two lieutenants and they picked out their men first. And they got the mess sergeants and so forth from available. And a sub foreman. And it gets involved in how they were paid. The men in the camp, of course, had a basic salary of $30 a month.
Mm-hmm.
25 of which was sent home.
Right.
And then if they had, there was a rating, there was a $36 rating and there was a $45 rating. And we had, we split those with our own.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but each crew generally had 145, at least one. The truck drivers, I think, were 36.
Now, all of the professional people, the foreman, Mr. Davis, they were employees of the National Park Service.
Right.
They
weren't employees of the Army.
No, they had nothing to do, actually, with the CCC business. They were working for the park. And it was the National Park Service that built this park.
Mm-hmm.
So lots of times, they think Ladd was in the CCC. Well, Ladd wasn't in the CCC.
Right, he was actually a part of the National Park Service.
He worked for the National Park Service. And then there was a...
There was a hierarchy that we were under in Santa Fe, wasn't it, in Mexico. Office of the National Park Service.
Was it that or was it Denver?
It was Santa Fe, at that time.
Okay.
I might have gone to Denver later.
But you had three things in here. You had a National Park Service, you had a CCC, and you had an Army.
Mm-hmm.
All worked together. And Ladd mentioned this, and I've heard Mr. Davies Sr. talk about it too, the fact that it was so different working with these men who were mature men. Now, many of them were completely uneducated, but they had skills.
Mm-hmm.
They had people that could do anything. And those camps had worked with just boys that had been picked up off the streets up in Chicago and what have you. That was a different something, because they really had lots of very excellent work. There was somebody that knew how to do it.
Well, one of Dad's foremen was an excellent camp. And under his direction, he picked up southern mechanics, if you want to say, to take care of the machine.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a blacksmith shop. Mm-hmm. We didn't have any trouble finding a blacksmith.
They had one of the foremen was a wonderful rockers.
Yeah, who was, do you remember his name?
Mr. Pierce. He lived in Havana.
Okay.
At the time.
Mm-hmm.
Arkansas.
Okay.
Mel Pierce. He was an excellent rockers.
Mm-hmm.
And when they got ready to build the lodge, for instance, they did not have the logs they needed. So the parks just bought 40 acres of timber and cut the timber and made the logs and built the lodge and campers. You know what I
mean? Right.
Didn't have it?
And we had men that could, what was famous? Imaginary character in the logging business.
Paul Bunyan.
Yeah, we had Paul Bunyan. You know, Paul Bunyan, when he wanted to make a beam out of a pine tree,
mm-hmm.
So he just put a broad axe on each foot and they said, clone the tree.
Oh.
He climbed the tree and he hacked it going up, you know, and then tucked it off. We had the first hacker and then cut it off. Anyway, we had people that could make beams out
mm-hmm.
of it and cut the joints and so forth to put the log work together.
There was another foreman, too, I think, that had charge of building all the furniture that was put
Do you remember who that was?
He was Charles Justice.
Okay.
And when,
Spell it.
Is it?
It's Swedish. Gustafsson.
Is it Gustafsson?
Yeah.
Okay.
And he was an excellent cabinet maker. And I also knew the basic carving.
Uh-huh.
And we had the road foreman, Paul Gordon. I don't know if it was Mason Gordon there.
No, that name
well,
is not
Mason
familiar.
Was, Lieutenant Governor. Mason was one of Arkansas's
Medal of Honor.
Medal of Honor. And he came back and
Congressional
got
Medal of Honor.
Oh, okay.
And came
Gloria.
Home and was Lieutenant Governor of Arkansas.
About 17 tournaments or something like that.
17 tournaments.
Wow.
He didn't have any tournaments.
But anyway, this is a nephew. This was just an old family in the commentary.
He was one of the road foremen. And Carl Overstreet.
Okay, now that name I know.
Yeah.
I've seen that name on the plans.
Yeah, well, Carl did this beautiful piece, I think, of stonework, the revetment on the road is to go down
on
the
side
of the mountain, the back side of the mountain.
Uh-huh.
I don't know whether you noticed the stone on the side there.
Mm-hmm.
Stayed as long as it was in the park, we did that. That was one of them.
But the stonework in the lodge and in the cabins and the visitor center is very, very beautiful stuff.
It's wonderful.
It's beautiful stuff.
It's just really nice work.
That we had later on, the Park Service sent us two landscape architects who were helpful in the design of the stonework.
Who did they send? Do you remember?
One was Leo Diedrich,
right, okay.
And one was
David Hunter.
Yes. David Hunter.
Okay, right.
And we had Ambler, Judge Ambler's youngest brother, mm-hmm. had just gotten out of college, and he was the foreman of the foreman that did the business.
Stayed
the business degree, kept the books and mm-hmm. all the payroll mm-hmm. and purchases and so forth. Guy used to talk about how there was a rule or thing or whatever, it wasn't a thumb of it, but you could, if it was less than $100, you didn't have to get approved.
Mm-hmm.
So they set up orders of $100 worth of this, that, and the other, you know, but one right after the other until they could get enough picks, for uh-huh. example. For
it, you know, they just had the same thing for the men to work with.
Right.
You know, it just was.
it was silly, but it worked. And we got them to work in the long run. We had this is one of the things that, for if you had a powder man, a dynamite, mm-hmm. if you want. And,
who was that?
The name was Grady.
Was this a CCC man?
He was a CCC man.
He
did
the
dynamite. We dynamited the stumps,
mm-hmm.
the big stumps and the big rocks and so forth. And he would work all day loading. And we didn't have these electrical things. We used fuse and mm-hmm. caps that had to be lit. And he had a certain, those fuse burned, as I remember, a minute per foot.
A minute per foot?
So if he wanted 3 minutes to run away, he put 3 feet.
Oh, wow.
Fuse on there. But what he did, he started at one end, let's say a day's work. He began to work and started loading stumps.
Mm-hmm.
And then at a certain time in the afternoon, he'd start lighting.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a carbide lamp. Do you know, are you familiar with them? They have a, instead of a globe, they had a spurt of flame.
Uh-huh.
And that used that flame to light the
fuses,
mm-hmm. which it was steady and mm-hmm. hot and did a good job. And he'd light one and then fight one down to the next one. Before he got through, quite often, they'd be blowing up behind him.
Could I tell you one of them? There's so many interesting tales of that time.
Mm-hmm.
They had to have someone carry off the garbage at the camp, where mm-hmm. after meals and sometimes. And Mr. Bryan, who lived up on the mountain, was employed to get rid of the garbage.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know, people, you can't imagine the pile. You cannot imagine. People, there were many of the men who brought their families. Now, they were living on $25 a month.
Mm-hmm.
The people up here who had tried to be farmers and all, they were just so poor that many, many of them lost their land.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't pay the taxes. Well, I don't know whether it was Mr. Bryan's idea or whether it was the Army, but there was so much good food that was left over every day
mm-hmm.
that it was a shame to throw it away.
Mm-hmm.
And so Mr. Bryan, when he came to pick up the garbage, they also had a great big container or containers, I don't know which, where they put the good food. And the people then, along the roads, would hang out on their mailbox a large bucket that had a bale over the top. Bale over the top. And Mr. Bryan would stop and fill up those buckets with the good food. Isn't that a marvelous story?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's just a sideline.
These are just human interest things.
Mm-hmm.
also there was a discipline problem that even the army had trouble.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. And some of the funniest tales of the, and this was eventually a friend of Lad's who was known as, was regular army and was known as a good disciplinarian, and they had to get rid of one of their lieutenants or whatever that was in charge of that sort of thing.
One of the first
captain. And bring this other man who was noted. Honey, don't put your foot on the budget.
Oh, no, it's okay. I just wanted to make sure that the tape was still running.
To be able to, can you tell some of the things? Oh,
well,
he had
happened,
me roughly.
What happened the first payday? They all got drunk.
They had
$5 a piece. They probably hadn't had any money, you know. Mm-hmm. They been eating. So, you know. But there was some moonshine available that they could get to. In fact, there, the whole camp was drunk and raising cane, fighting and playing cards and everything. And they had assigned one of the campers. I won't say inmates, but
the CCC.
As a police, official police. And he had a five-cell flashlight. And he hit about five of them over the head with the flashlight. It didn't bother him. And it was pretty bad. They finally called and got a deputy sheriff and hauled some of them down to jail for days. But they relieved that captain and got another one who was an old hand. He had been advisor to the National Guard.
Mm-hmm.
His name was What's your friend?
Well, honey, my snilty is showing people's names.
Yeah, but anyway, I went down and he, my first thing he did was fire this inmate, the police.
Mm-hmm.
I said, what'd you fire him for? I said, I thought he was doing pretty good. So he hit five guys. He said, yeah, he didn't knock a single one of them down. So he straightened them out. These sub-foreman or grading they started carrying big sticks with them, you know, as their sort of badge of office. And the men didn't like that. So his new captain didn't like it either. So he said, the next one of those sticks he saw, he was going to hang a pickup. In other words, he was going to put it back in the working room. So out at the back end of the mess hall was a big pile of those walking sticks. Right after that announcement by the captain.
One of the funny tales that Mr. Bailey's secret told was about someone, or somebody who lived on the mountain, I guess it is, came running up to the camp and said that one of his cows had gotten in some fresh alfalfa or something and had swollen up, you know, and fallen over on the side, you know, with their hands, I mean, their feet in the air and all. And, of course, losing a cow was a serious thing in that at that time. And he said, oh, Mr. Davis, is there anybody that could come and help?
Mm-hmm.
And,
well, it had to be somebody that knew where to stick them. You could stick a knife into their abdomen somewhere and relieve that gas. So it had to have somebody that really knew
about it. Mm-hmm. Well, this man said that he knew what to do, but he didn't do that. That wasn't what he did. And that he'd be glad to go and take care of that cow. So they all piled in the back of the pickup and off they went to find the cow. And Mr. Davies, tell us the funniest thing, said he he got around to where that cow's mouth was.
They got them to stand it up.
Oh, that's right. They got
there's
the cow.
Enough of them men to stand it up.
Stand the thing. Got the tongue and pull the tongue as hard as he can. And Mr. Davies Sr. said that air just went out of that cow, and she just immediately came back to her normal size and trotted on. Said it was the funniest thing she'd ever seen.
It was gas.
Yeah, oh, gas. And then the dances. They would have dances on Saturday. I've seen them. We would never go even right close, but we'd sit out on the road and watch the dance up at the pavilion that's right above the pavilion right above the lake. Oh, it was a picture. We've never seen such dance. Of course, lots of those ended in fights, too.
Yeah, they
that. You would want to use this story, but it's so funny I'm going to tell it.
Okay, no, go ahead.
One of the men had left his wife on the farm, wherever it was, and he was so excited about getting his first paycheck, his first $5, because that was going to give him enough bus fare to go home. And that was all he could talk about. Everybody knew that he was going to go home and see his daughter. Well, I guess he went maybe on a Friday night, and instead of not coming back till Sunday night, he turned up Saturday morning. And then we go, what in the world happened? What are you doing now? Well, he says, I had a boy that was staying on the place to help my wife, and says, I got there and I found them in bed together. And he says, by the way I slammed the door, they knowed I was mad. And he turned around and came back.
Oh, goodness.
All right, now we've done enough foolishness. What else do you want?
Let's see. Okay, now you mentioned,
what's that?
Let's see, you talked about some of the projects you worked on.
Yeah.
You said the lodge, laying out everything for
I laid out, I staked out the lodge.
Mm-hmm.
So I take the plans, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I had two or three of the men that helped me.
Mm-hmm.
I had my little crew.
Who was in your crew?
Well, I remember there was one named Atticus Black. That was, I guess, was sort of the head.
Where was he from?
I don't know, somewhere over around. In that area, in the Yale Canyon.
Let me ask you something, lad. Who laid out the trails? Who built the places in the rocks that you could climb up on the high things, the high rocks? For instance, I'm thinking about that.
David Neal Graves had the trail crew.
Well, that was another one of the foremen.
And he had, he probably got one of Mr. Pierce's stone masons to cut the steps and rock them.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever walked over any trees?
No, I haven't.
Wonderful lady. And lots of interesting things to see. One of the trails, there were several trails that go down into the canyon, where the falls is that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a little Cedar Creek runs along, it came to what was called Blue Hole, which was a wonderful swimming place. Now, it was very difficult to get down to Blue Hole, but you all finally built a road, didn't you?
Not a road, no.
Just a trail?
That was more than a trail.
Well, eventually there was a road down to Blue
Hole. There was never a road in the canyon. Or
I knew there wasn't a road in
the
canyon.
Going down to it, but they were all trails.
Just trails.
But it was, and if they used any material, they had to carry them down there. So they built things out of holes and so forth. And they decided they needed a privy at the Blue Hole. So they built one out of cut poles and so forth, arranged an outside privy. And David, I don't know whether he was just joking to begin with, he said, "Mr. Pearson, this is a stonemason." So if you'll make me two stone privy seats, we'll carry them down and put them in that privy. And he did. He said, "Okay, I'll do that." And he picked out and found some rock and threw about 4 inches thick. That was just what he wanted. And he had the tubes and he shaped the holes properly.
In the meantime, somebody stole the privy seats. Somebody was talking about it the other day. Yeah. The fact that somebody had gone down there and stolen those privy seats. I don't know that anybody even swims at Blue Hole anymore. Do you reckon they do?
The trail is obliterated as far as from the road is concerned. It used to come out on the road, but I don't see it anymore. I think people that go down there come from farther up the canyon.
There is I think the interesting thing about Pigeon in relation to its contour and what have you is the fact that the mountain slopes to the center. In fact, when we were putting in our well, we got a geologist. He walked me on the side and said, "The rocks all along down the mountain, all going down." He says, "There's never," and Ladd says this, "there's no washes down the sides of the mountain at all, because everything drains to the mill." Well, it is that drainage to the middle that made the little creek that made Cedar Falls. Now my child Richard, you know who Richard is, director, says that the lake is really an artesian lake. Now all the water drains to it, but that still wouldn't be enough to make it stay running all year long the way it does. He says it's an artesian lake. In other words, it's fed by springs.
Right.
Nebo has nothing particularly interesting. Mount Magazine is nothing particularly interesting. You've got magnificent views, but you do not have any of the trails and the beauty of the rocks and the support that's the part you do. The formations that have been made by the canyons that you were talking about. The view of is just...
It's incredible.
It's absolutely incredible. Now, his dad...
Oh, really?
I said, your daddy sighted the lodge.
Well, with the help of the
landscape people.
Yeah, he had picked it out. That had to be approved, but pretty good size